available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC.
We are the Podcast of Champions.
Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
That was a weird one, Dave.
Yeah.
I'm Ryan Abraham.
It was sort of like underwater movie phone.
And a little Count Chocula in there, too,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, there was a lot going on.
Yeah. Well, I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com. That's the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together, we are a team. We make the Podcast of Champions. And what we do is talk Pac-12 football and some Disney princesses and some Civil War generals, but mostly Pac-12 football. And we love talking it with all of you. We got some interesting news and notes to discuss today with the Pac-12 schedule release coming out about a month behind some of the other Power 5 conferences. We'll talk about that and what it means for all the schools. I think overall, pretty good schedule. I think they did a good job this year. So we'll talk about that. If you have any questions for us, you can get a hold of us a number of different ways. You can email us, pac12podcast@gmail.com. You could call or text us. We have a voicemail today, 424-532-0678. You can tweet us at Pac-12Podcast. We're probably the most active there. And the website is pac12podcast.com, where you can find the old episodes. And on Reddit, it's reddit.com/r/podcastofchampions. But if you have the Apple podcasting app on your iPhone or your Mac, wherever you got it, please subscribe to the show, Podcast of Champions. Just subscribe. It helps you. It helps us. It helps everybody. But rating us, giving us a five-star rating, is the biggest help of all. Talk as much trash as you want in the comments, but leave us those five stars. That's all we ask. It's just a slight ask, David. So this is what we want from our listeners.
All we ask is five-star reviews and 2 hours of your free time to listen to just a solid 3 out of 10 podcast, but you must rate it 5 stars out of 5. We do have a few new reviews.
Are you ready? Oh, we do. Oh, what do we got?
We got one from Grumpy Oso. This is Grumpy Bear for those interested in the Espanol. 5 stars. Excellent job. Excellent analysis of the conference and excellent job by the conference in getting rid of Champagne Larry. I nominate Ryan as the new Pac-12 commissioner. Ryan brings a lot of knowledge to the podcast, and Dave is very knowledgeable in his Disney movies, Princesses, which is very scary. But what do you expect from a UCLA grad? Keep up the great job, guys, or should I just say good job, Ryan?
Love wow. It.
Excellent work. Excellent
we love those work. Ones that are slanted towards me.
Yeah. This is a 5-star review from FTFO33. That is, for those who don't know their abbreviations very well, fight the fuck on, 33. Yeah. Bill Walton's favorite podcast. What can be said about this podcast that hasn't already been said? It's okay. It's mediocre. There's only 20 to 25 of us that listen to it. I guess that's all that has been said, so I'll stop there. But I'll also keep going. This is everything you could possibly want from a podcast that talks about the premier Power 5 conference. There's comparisons of coaches to inanimate objects. There are recurring characters that email in and provide analysis despite their school winning 0 national championships in the sport. There's some chatter here and there about football and Larry Scott's reign of terror. This podcast has it all and delivers the type of analysis deserving of the Conference of Champions.
Nice. Some good ones.
I think we did Big Smooth already, so I think we're good. I think we're all set.
Thanks for those, especially through the off season. I know there's not as much going on, but we do have stuff. Bless you, sir. We do have stuff going on because we finally got the 2021 Pac-12 schedule release. If you watch John Wilner's tweets, he tweeted, I think on Monday, that it was supposed to come out tomorrow on Tuesday, and it did. But not before. The Pac-12 sent out, so we're expecting the Pac-12 release, David. I know you are just, edge of your seat. You wanted this to come out. You know, every day, every moment that goes by, it's hurting the conference to not have the schedule out. I know it's important to you, but we get an email from the Pac-12 about their new apparel partner, Jockey. And so you're expecting the schedule, and they sort of like slip this in there. And Kevin Wade tweeted out, and I tweeted like, I thought it was, this is like the apparel that the like on-air talent wears and stuff. Like
as underwear, right?
Jockey's an underwear company. So it was – I'm like, wasn't it Adidas or Reebok or something? But it was Adidas until a couple years ago. Then it was Nike. And they went from Nike to Jockey. And I was like, well, if you want to get better TV ratings, just have your talent, your on-air talent, wear underwear. And I think a lot of people will be watching your show. So maybe this is a smart move.
Maybe. Maybe. It's a, certainly an odd promotional opportunity for an underwear company to, you know, be an apparel sponsor for network talent. That seems like an odd fit. No pun intended. but yeah, I don't get this at all. And it was really funny because they first, like it was like the day before they posted, oh, big announcement from the Pac-12. New York Life will continue to be their life insurance partner. And it's just, I don't know. I mean, I'm not on the mailing list for the Big 12 or the ACC or whatever, but are they like broadcasting this nonsense? Like, are they putting that out there that they've got a new underwear sponsor or, that their life insurance company is ready to go?
I don't think anything about the life insurance company. I'm pretty sure you're not going to see the SEC go, you know, for a few years we had a, you know, all our talent on the SEC network, they were wearing Adidas. And then the next couple of years they were wearing Nike. And then now we're going to put them in Jockey. Like, that's just not like one of these things is not like the other. It really seems like Nike dropped the Pac-12 and who could they get? And they get Jockey. Like when you're thinking polos on television, I'm not thinking Jockey. You know what I mean?
No, I'm not thinking Jockey. I rarely think Jockey actually. But I will say, the funniest thing that I discovered this week is that the Pac-12 still does not own Pac12.com.
Wait, who owns that? Where's that one?
It's just a, it's literally just a parked website.
Ah,
they just gotta make an offer, I'm sure.
I think our boy.
The truth is, we all know Champagne Larry likes to roll large, right?
With some of those millions, maybe he could, as a parting gift to the Conference of Champions, just buy that and give it to the conference. But do you think
it's 50 grand? Isn't that worth 50 grand to have Pac12.com?
100%. Like you are paying a terrible commissioner $5 million a year. If you wouldn't, for 50 grand, you would have this domain name for perpetuity. Yes. Come on.
Well, frankly, I mean, they might have an argument to get it through like legal means. I'm sure they've got something copyrighted there.
Yeah.
So I don't know, but it's really stupid that they don't have it. That's all I'm saying. I hate having to type a hyphen into a URL. That's yeah. Anyway.
It's very Pac-12. This is, you know, if this podcast is very Pac-12, not owning Pac12.com is very Pac-12 as well. All right. Well, we finally got some breaking news, bated breath. Everyone wanted it. You wanted the Pac-12 schedule. We had a grammar discussion on Twitter, which is funny. I think I tweeted like that David could care less. I typically say couldn't care less. I think I just didn't type it the way I normally would say it, but then I started defending it because I was like, oh, this seems acceptable too. We had this big grammar discussion on Twitter. It was kind of funny. And it sort of ended when I told David he could do more work then. And he didn't.
So do you know
that.
The concept of code switching?
Not sure. I don't.
It's a language concept where you basically adapt your style of language, which can be written or verbal, to the medium or people you're speaking to. So typical example of this in modern times, outside of like cultural connotations, but typical example is Twitter. Okay. Most of the people who are posting on Twitter in like a real posting way, they're not using proper abbreviations and they're almost never using capital letters. That's an example of code switching. One of the things I've noticed in myself in writing sports crap and just doing sportsy stuff is I use improper grammar for effect a lot of times. Like I'll often go, he's got instead of he has, even though I obviously know the difference, but it's very much in the parlance of talking about sports. The could care less thing, I don't know if that's exactly it, but it is a part of it. Like the could care less is very much because, well, you hear dummy sports people talk and it's one of the codes that's with, you know, speaking about sports is you kind of use dumb talk sometimes. And it's just, I think a lot of people adapt it. But There's a lot of it. There's an example that's on the tip of my tongue that I can't think of right now, but there's a bunch of these where people use certain phrases because it fits that the discussion topic or the you know people you're speaking to.
Yeah.
Which isn't to say everyone out there is stupid. It's just like that's the parlance of speaking about sports, and that's not to say again that it's specifically with this. Just that you know sometimes we all type kind of stupid stuff that we know is not right because it's just you know kind of in the vein.
Yeah, I mean you see like a famous author on Twitter, like they have limited characters, so they might put like you are for your just because they're just typing, they're fitting it into the medium that they're on. The could care less, it doesn't bother my ears much, but I normally say like couldn't care less, but I tweeted that out and then I just felt like getting in an argument with people at like Grammar Police on Twitter, which is fun to do.
Well, so I'm pro, like telling Grammar Police people to shove whatever, because basically language.
And you're a grammar expert. Like you were an expert and you were, yeah.
I'm pretty good at this whole stuff. Yeah. I just said I'm pretty good at this whole stuff, by the way. The main thing is language evolves. Language is always changing. And oftentimes what grammarians, these people who are real sticklers for it, they're pushing against change. They're pushing against the natural evolution of language. I would argue, and I argued this on Twitter after you got beat up on for like an entire day, which is that there's nothing wrong with something that is quote unquote incorrect. My issue with certain things is, particularly with could care less, is the words themselves actually mean essentially the opposite of couldn't care less. So if you're trying to discern that as a non-native speaker, like if you're just learning English, could care less makes absolutely no sense in the context that it's used. It's not that it's odd or that it's misplaced. It's that it doesn't make sense. Like those words together mean you could, in fact, care a little bit less than you do now. You could, in fact, care a lot less than you do now. It's unclear. Couldn't care less means you care the absolute least amount. You could not in any way care less than you do now.
Yeah.
But that's why I find that one just like not. It's not something that like inflammable, meaning the same thing. Who cares? One means inflamed. One means flames. I don't know. Like that's no big deal. Nobody cares. Literally and figuratively, like literally, basically now meaning figuratively, it's basically for effect. I don't mind that one as much, even though it's again the same thing because it does have like humorous benefits. Like literally was always destined to be used figuratively from sarcastic people. Like that was just always going to be the case. But could care less, couldn't care less. That feels like a simple mistake that makes our language less clear, which is why I would be opposed to it. But again, a lot of people say it. So it's part of that, you know, vernacular.
Yeah. I think like care, it's, you couldn't care less, but then care less became like its own like kind of entity, like meaning like care less. Oh, that person doesn't care as much. So you're so like, you could care less. Like you, it's basically saying, this person doesn't care, but that does it. Like you said, that's not what it means. Like irregardless is one I don't really like. I don't ever use that one. But again, like they brought up on Twitter, you know, you can find acceptable uses for that because it's so many people use it. You're like, okay, might as well just make it okay. Which I believe that's what could care less. Like the Webster Dictionary said, yeah, you can use either one interchangeably. And people still got mad at me. I'm like, well, the dictionary said you could use it, you know.
It's basically, it's all the prescriptive versus descriptive thing. Because one, a dictionary is prescriptive in that it's determining what is the proper way of using the language, which open to interpretation, and it's mostly pedantic bullshit. Descriptive is describing the way the language is actually used. Like, yeah, people say could care less and they mean this. Or people say irregardless and they mean this. That doesn't mean that the dictionary is prescribing that as proper use of language. It's describing what's actually happening. Whatever. People are going to speak however they want to speak. It's determining exactly what you are trying to convey when you talk. Because it's not just always with the words you're saying, but it's how you're choosing to phrase them and what order you're putting them in and all that kind of stuff and what you want to say about yourself when you're talking. And for me, I like to think about the logic of the words themselves. Like, could care less. Well, if it kind of makes sense in like a certain format, it's doing no harm. I have no problem with it. But for me, it's doing a little bit of harm because it drastically diminishes clarity for a pretty significant subset of people who might be learning the language and have no idea what the hell that means. Like, I think about it trying to explain that to my, like, my 4-year-old, and I'm like, well, yeah, sorry, that doesn't make any sense. So, yeah, that's kind of where I go with it. I mean, you make your own personal determinations of it. I don't think grammar being dictated from the top does any good for anybody. And by the top, I truly do mean Twitter critics.
So hopefully, if you're listening to other Pac-12 podcasts out there, the preamble to the release of the 2021 football schedule goes into grammatical usage of the English language, like we did here on the Podcast of Champions. No other podcast is going to
do that. You only get this here, baby.
Oh, yeah, the schedule came out. You guys can take a look at it online. You know,
who cares? Like, that's the thing. Who cares?
Well, John Wilder did a great job kind of breaking down. We can kind of go through each school, just do a few notes or something. But
he better have done a good job. He was waiting for this thing for weeks.
Oh, he had a analysis ready to go. Tweeted out like, I got my breakdown ready. I'm ready to go. So we'll go down each school. But I think in general, it's like there's not as much egregious crap going on. And some people are asking like, well, what does it matter? Like, yeah, everyone's opponent was determined. Everyone's home and away situation for each game was determined. It's just the order. And the problem is we've seen some really crappy orders that were just almost like random in the past where, you know, Oregon or whatever, Washington's like this, you know, title contender, and they always play the Ducks on the road after Oregon gets a bye. Like, there's crap like that. The one year USC, every opponent USC had a bye or extra time. They had like a Friday or Thursday game before. Like, every opponent had that. And you're like, how is that even possible? Like, stupid stuff like that would happen in the schedule all the time. This schedule seems pretty clean. There's going to be a few, that's not ideal. But for the most part, I don't think you're going to see all this crazy stuff happening, you know, double bye, play, you know, double road, play a team on the bye all that often. That happens a couple times. You know, Friday road game after another Friday, you know, another road game. I think they've cleaned most of that stuff up. So that's at least a positive. But any overall thoughts before we kind of look at each team?
No. They scheduled, it looks to me, I mean, I could be miscounting, but it looks to me like they scheduled 9 conference games for everyone. They didn't screw that up. So that's good. Everyone got a bye week, at least one. UCLA got 2. That's cool.
Yeah.
Only 1 week 0 game this year. But no, it's a football schedule. So I think it's got all the elements of a football schedule, you know, 12 games per team. 9 of them conference, 3 of them out of conference. You know, some games on Saturdays, a few of them sprinkled in here and there on Fridays. It looks like it'll be an exciting season full of several weeks of games.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I love that analysis. It's a brilliant breakdown. All right. We'll go through them quick then, because David seems very not interested.
No, I'm totally enthused. Let's talk about it. Let's break it down.
All right. First up,
I've got notes about everybody.
Here we go.
Arizona Wildcats.
All right. A couple Friday games. For the Wildcats, a bye week in week 5. It looks like it's, you know, they got San Diego State and BYU to start. You know, that was already determined. Any thoughts on Arizona's schedule, David?
I would say it's good that Washington State is also on 6 days rest for that week 12 game. Yep, that's all I got. So right now I would say BYU and San Diego State, those present as potentially tough matchups. I don't know. Overall assessment of the schedule, I'd say it's medium difficult.
Yeah.
But that's mainly because I would say it's, I would go hard actually.
Yeah.
This is Jed Fish's first year. I think I'm grading on a curve a little bit just because of how down Arizona's been. But this does shape up to be pretty tough. And it's what, 8 straight weeks without a bye?
Yeah, the bye, you know, week 5. So that's a little rough. You know, in that stretch, you got 2 Friday games. Like you said, BYU and San Diego State to start. And they're going to go on the road at Oregon in week 4. And Oregon's coming off a cupcake game against Stony Brook. So it's going into the bye. I mean, this could be a 1-3 record for Jed Fishman's first year. And the end is pretty crappy. I mean, they got, you know, Washington on a Friday and then at USC. That's not a great stretch. And then they finish off with in November is Cal, Utah, you know, at Washington State on a Friday and then at Arizona State. Doesn't look easy to me, but no, it's pretty tough.
Hard.
So sorry, Jed Fish, but
we rate that one hard.
Yeah, it's not. They didn't do you a whole lot of favors, but you know, it is what it is. They're gonna have to take some time to rebuild that one. All right, next up,
Arizona State Sun Devils.
Couple weekday games.
I'm gonna assess these according to Moe's hardness scale.
Okay,
I would say that one is a 9. For Corundum.
Okay. What is the Mohs hardness scale?
It's a chemistry thing, I think.
Okay.
It's like how hard a thing is.
The
relative hardness is according to this numbered scale. I mean, I could get into the absolute hardness, which is the Rosiwall absolute hardness, I guess. But we'll go to Mohs relative hardness, the hardness scale. So a 10 is a diamond. 1 is like talc.
Okay. So where this one's
a fingernail. But diamond itself will scratch corundum, which is number 9 on this.
Okay.
I don't know what corundum is. So we're going to assess these according to Mohs hardness scale.
I like that. Corundum. Okay. Arizona State, a couple weekday games too. The opener, you know, it's a Thursday on the opener. That's fine. They also play BYU. 5 Pac-12 teams play BYU, but they play BYU on the road. They also have Stanford on a Friday. Any initial thoughts on this one?
A lot of legitimate whines from ASU fans on Twitter about the back-to-back Pacific Northwest road games in November, Washington and Oregon State, which I think is completely legitimate. If you look around, no one else really got screwed like that. I think Colorado has Cal and then Oregon, but it's tough. I mean, Colorado is always going to kind of be in a tough spot like that. But, I mean, ASU had another road game against UCLA that maybe could have been fitted in here somehow or move them around a little bit so that you're not doing back-to-back Pacific Northwest roadies. Because that's a lot of travel. That's a long travel. It's a long flight. And it's going to be cold. In November up there. So I don't think that was great scheduling for ASU. I would say from like a difficulty standpoint, this doesn't seem that rough. No Oregon certainly helps. I would say this one for me on the Mohs hardness scale, this one works out to about a 5, an appetite.
An appetite. Okay.
Yeah, scrapable with a knife. This one is scrapable with a knife.
Okay. I might go 6-ish on this one. The weekday games are all at home.
To be clear, you're going with scraping with a steel knife, orthoclase, 6.
I thought orthoclase from the get-go when I looked at the schedule.
Yeah, no, you were just like, ooh, this one screams orthoclase to me.
So the weekday games are at home. That's good. They don't have to play any team that's coming off a bye, so that's a positive. I think Wilner put in his notes that when ASU plays Utah, it'll be after Utah was at USC. And then when they go to Seattle and play Washington, it'll be after Washington faces Oregon. So a couple of those tougher games, you might get a team that's beat up a little bit. But you're right. You know, at Washington, November 13th, and then at Oregon State, that's rough. But the big one, I think, you know, November 6th, USC, that could determine the Pac-12 South. At Washington is going to be tough. So I think it's manageable. And the bye week is October 23rd. So like, you know, about when you want it heading into that final stretch. So I pretty good, except for that, you know, that the back-to-back roadies, to the Pacific Northwest isn't great. And, you know, potential for snow or something, that November 20th date against Oregon State for sure. Even October 16th at Utah, maybe there's some snow there. So we'll see.
True.
Okay, next we got
California Golden Bears.
This one, they got one Friday game. They'll be, but it's at Oregon, so that's no fun. Bye week is week six, you know, so pretty normal. Most of the bye weeks are kind of in the middle. It seems pretty manageable. You know, I don't know. What do you, any thoughts here?
No, it seems incredibly manageable. The back-to-back roadies that they got dealt are the easiest ones from a travel standpoint. It's Stanford and then UCLA at the end of the season. So that seems manageable. The non-conference doesn't seem like it's too troublesome. You know, Nevada, TCU. Is that Sac State?
Sacramento State, yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, they should be able to – I mean, this should be a pretty easy schedule for them. I'm going to say on a Mohs hardness scale, this one is calcite. You can scratch this with a copper coin, baby.
Is that a 3 or 4?
That's a 3.
Okay. Their bye is before the big Oregon game. And
yeah,
Oregon
it sets up nicely.
Yeah. Oregon's got a bye too. So, but, you know, both thing there. And then they play USC right after USC plays ASU. So another one of those kind of potential look ahead or whatever, or get beat up sort of games. And Willner did note that the Bears are the only California team that finishes against the other three California teams. So they play USC, Stanford, and UCLA back to back to back to finish the season. But overall, I think it's manageable. You know, there's no, Utah on the schedule. There's no Arizona State on the schedule. So, you know, you're playing USC from the South, but you also got Arizona, you know, and Colorado.
So are you agreeing with me? Is it calcite? What are we saying?
I think I'll go calcite. Yeah. And, okay. You know, UCLA. Okay. So,
right.
Yeah. All right. Next up we have
Colorado Buffalo.
This one I think you're going to find a little bit tougher. Couple Friday games in this one to start the season and to end the season, but just the out of conference playing Texas A&M and Minnesota.
Oh, I'll give you my preview. This is okay. 10. This is diamond.
I would save that because there's going to be a team that definitely.
No. This shit's cut in corundum. Maybe okay. There's another one cut in corundum, but this one definitely.
There is another one. Yes. There is another, if you'd like to say, as Yoda would say.
Yes.
Okay. So this is a 10 for you.
Yeah. Well, you're talking about Texas A&M and Minnesota, right?
Yeah.
Non-con? Okay. Then they've got a go back-to-back roadies, Cal, Oregon. They've got Utah roadie on a Friday to end the season. I mean, yeah. I mean, it's a 9 or a 10. I'm going to go 10.
The four-game stretch, you know, you play Northern Colorado on a Friday to start the season. You get a little extra day, but Texas A&M is in Denver, so like kind of a neutral site game, but pretty much home game. Minnesota, you know, it's a team that won 11 games in 2019. That, you know, they were a pretty hot team. You go on the road at ASU, a Pac-12 South favorite, and then host USC the week. So that's four games in a row.
They could be in a really, really sick 1-4 spot right then.
Right. Heading into the bye, you know, and, you know, that's tough. You got to play at Oregon. That doesn't seem so easy. You got Washington at home. You're playing Utah on the road. Yeah, this is tough. Four of the last six games are on the road. I'm with you. I'd probably go 9 on this one, but this is definitely not easy.
All right. You go corundum. I go diamond.
All right. I got my diamond safe for a special team. But next up we got
Oregon Ducks.
So the Ducks have one Friday game. They play Cal at home on a Friday. This is a, you know, you got Fresno State, which is, you know, that's a feisty team to open the season. Stony Brook, probably not that good. But the big one is at Ohio State. Didn't get a chance to host Ohio State last year like they were supposed to. Now you go on the road to take on a playoff caliber team. That's going to be a big one for the conference. That's September 11th. It's a big weekend for the conference. That's certainly a big game for the conference.
Yeah, that one's huge. So that one, that game, I mean, obviously that's a game where they will not be favored and more than likely be significant dogs. But Fresno State, manageable. Stony Brook, obviously, tough game, but they should be able to handle that. Rest of it, I mean, you're talking about only, it's the four conference road game year. So that's, you know, it's not, having Washington and Utah on the road isn't ideal. You mostly get the weaker slate at home, except for UCLA. But I would say this is medium grade hard almost entirely because of Ohio State. So I'll go 8. I'll go this one as an 8. This one is Topaz. It very much would scratch quartz.
Okay. Topaz I'm good with. The Ducks are the only team that doesn't play back-to-back road games in the conference. So there's a positive there. Unfortunately,
so they're setting Oregon up for a run.
Unfortunately, their traditional bye week before the Washington game went away. So I don't know where that one went. So they have they host Washington State, but it's sandwiched between a trip to Seattle to play Washington and a trip to Salt Lake City. And we've seen Washington State play Oregon tough in the past, so that's a tough little stretch there. Washington State at home, and then at Oregon, and then hosting the Civil War. So let's see. It's like, and Willard did a note here that three teams, Washington, UCLA, and Utah, play Oregon at home in vulnerable spots following back-to-back road trips. So they have a little advantage there, too. It all starts with Ohio State for me in this one.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Next up, we have
Oregon State Beavers.
One of three teams that have no weekday games, so that's cool. But the problem is a lot of their easier opponents are road games, which makes it a little less, you know, easy, I guess you could say.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, looking at it, it doesn't – so nothing about it screams, like, hugely hard. It's a pretty evenly split schedule. There's three home games and three away games on each half of the bye week. The non-con is it's fine, I would say. Like, it's, you know, medium. I would say opening up conference play with USC on the road, not super easy.
Followed by Washington. USC, Washington back-to-back, that's not a good way to start the conference schedule.
You don't love it. You don't love it. Cal, Colorado shape up as their back-to-back roadies, which, you know, as far as such things go, not the worst. I'd give this one, let's see. I'd go back to Orthoclays here. I think this is a 6. You could scratch this baby with a steel knife.
I'm with you on that. I mean, there are no weekday games, like I said. No teams coming off a bye, which is nice. But, like, if you're Oregon State and you're scratching for conference wins.
With a steel knife.
You remember will Oregon State win a game or will Colorado win a game? You kind of want to have the team on the schedule that is on a 12-game losing streak. You'd like to see the Arizona Wildcats. They're not on there. So just that not being there, I think it makes this a little bit tougher. But, you know, middle of the season, you know, it's kind of an evenly paced out schedule, but you could start off your non-con with a loss at Purdue. Certainly Hawaii can be a dangerous team sometimes. And you could start off 0-2 in conference with at USC and Washington. So I think you might have to restart the engines at some point and get this rolling, but we'll see. You know, this has been a feisty team at times, maybe a little underperformed where we thought they could be. But you know, I think it's probably a solid 6, like you said.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go to, the team up in the Bay Area.
Stanford Cardinal.
This would be a diamond.
This is a diamond. The only team in the country to play all Power 5 teams. And I think the last time a team did that, it was USC in 2011. But it's Kansas State and Arlington. And then on the road, USC got to play at Vanderbilt. So those are the first three games. You know, Stanford's used to not playing at home from this last season, but
that's three straight road games. I mean, whatever you want to say about Kansas State, it is definitely closer to Arlington than Stanford.
Yeah, and then you end the season with Notre Dame, so you know they play from the South. They play USC. They play Arizona State. They play Utah. I mean, it's I don't know how you could make it harder. So yeah, diamond for me.
Yeah, absolute diamond. The only thing in their favor is that they do have, you know, six home games and only five true road games. But that Kansas State game is going to be a true road game. It's going to feel like that. They closed the year with four home games in five. So a chance to close it strong. But when you look at those home games, it's Washington, Utah on a Friday, Cal in the rivalry game, and then Notre Dame. Like, yeah. Stanford, not great.
No.
Not great. I mean, this isn't it's not malpractice on the level of traveling to UCF, but you should never be in this position where you've scheduled three Power 5 opponents in your non-conference, ever.
And
that is absurd.
And the Pac-12 really didn't do Stanford a lot of favors. There's only two teams that play two Friday games, and neither of which is like the season-ending rivalry one. Arizona and Stanford. So, Stanford has Utah at home on a Friday and then plays at Arizona State on a Friday. And then you got a back to back, you know, trips to Tempe and Pullman. That's going to be so fun. And it'll be a short week at ASU. So, you know, do you want to play Utah on short rest after facing Washington? Like, there's a lot of things here that aren't in Stanford's favor, and I think the Pac-12 could have been a little more lenient towards the Cardinal.
Right.
But all right, well, yeah, we'll see. Diamond for sure for Stanford. Okay, next up we've got
UCLA Bruins.
Bruins, only team with two bye weeks because they play like a week zero game against Hawaii, but there's this team called LSU that won the championship a couple years ago.
Fresno State trash last year. Absolute feces.
They were trash. They were trash. Fresno State. And I don't know if you know this, David, but Chip Kelly hasn't won an out-of-conference game. So
you don't say.
There's a legit shot that this is an 0-3 out-of-conference schedule, right? I mean, LSU and Fresno State. Maybe not Hawaii, but I don't know.
Oh, my God. If it's 0-3, he should probably be fired in September. He won't be, but he probably should be. Hawaii's not great. Todd Graham is, I think, going to do fine there, but it's not like even when it was rolling with Rolovich. Fresno State's kind of taken a turn. They haven't been as good as they were a few years ago with Tedford. And LSU was trash last year. So certainly possible to have an overhyped 3-0. 0-3 would take moving some real mountains of crap. I don't even know if Chip Kelly has it in him to go 0-3.
I wouldn't suggest 0-3 just because he's got this streak going. I wouldn't say could it continue. Like that's.
Oh, I know. It would be magical. We would all you know celebrate. There'd be fireworks if he could make it happen. But that would just take a lot of doing.
The Pac-12, the thing to do would be go 0-3 out of conference and then win the South. Like that
yeah,
would
yeah.
be very.
Oh yeah, yeah. 7-2 in conference, 0-3 out of conference. The beautiful, beautiful 7-5. Otherwise for UCLA, I would say this is generally a pretty manageable schedule. I don't think that non-conference is all that hard given the very recent performance from all of those teams. Also, it's a rare seven home games for UCLA. They rarely put themselves in this position with three non-conference home games. Just kind of a weird vagary of the schedule that happened. So even with five conference road games, they ended up with seven home games, which is, again, a rarity for UCLA. I would say because of the two bye weeks, because of the home road split, even with getting the worst half of the Oregon-Washington split this year, I would give this a Mo's. I would give it a 4. I would say it's fluorite. I think it's easily scrapable with a knife.
Wow. Okay. I might go a little higher than that.
Are you going 6 Orthoclays again?
What's 5?
5 is appetite.
I'll do appetite.
So mine is easily scrapable with a knife. Yours is still scrapable with a knife.
Okay.
Like you might have to work with, add a little bit more. You might have to get some elbow into it.
So you're going appetite? Yeah, I'll go appetite.
I think
the five conference road games, but you got three non-cons in a row, but the non-cons have been tough. And missing Oregon State and Washington State, like that's not ideal. Cal, Stanford, Oregon, Washington, like, oh, let's add those teams to the schedule. So you have some extra time to get ready for LSU, which is nice. But with the Hawaii game, and you got a bye week before Fresno State. So I think you could make the non-con a little bit more manageable, but this is the opener for LSU, right? So at least UCLA gets some time to, work on their game a little bit. I think that's an advantage. So that would make it a little bit easier, but the back-to-back road games, So October 9th at Arizona, October 16th at Washington. So each of those teams will have a bye week to get ready for UCLA. So that's, Huskies are coming off a bye. So play Washington off a bye, on the road. That's a little tough. So they're having that extra time. But they get that bye week late in the season, should be rested up for the stretch against Colorado, USC and UCLA. So yeah, I it's probably mediocre. But there's a couple, questionable things. Like I said, with those two road games and both of those teams coming off byes isn't ideal.
Okay. But
Arizona's just like, they're not that good. Well, you have to 12 game losing streak, but we'll see. All right. Next up,
USC Trojans.
One of the three teams with no weekday games. They had teams like Alabama, Oregon, Washington on the schedule last year. They're not there this year. Talk to people around USC. They are very happy with this one.
Yeah, I haven't read any of the usual whines on Twitter from USC people.
Yeah, bye right in the middle. The toughest game is at Notre Dame, but they come off a bye for that one. No Oregon, no Washington.
I mean, that tough back-to-back roadie, ASU and Cal, how are you going to handle that one?
Yeah. So really there's no complaints. I would say
give the fandom some time.
Now will be there's no excuses that Clay Helton needs to win all the games, but
I mean, I look at this frankly and I say, look, you got San Jose State. That's Brent Brennan, baby. Right?
7-1 San Jose State. Highest ranked team in California.
You've got resurgent Stanford. It's going to be looking at its own schedule and say, where can we get a win? Where can we get a win? And they're going to be looking. They're going to be searching, and they're going to find USC in week two. You got Washington State, year two for Nick Rolovich. What's he got cooking? You got Oregon State. Look, Jonathan Smith is just rolling, no matter who he puts in at quarterback, no matter who he puts in at running back. That team's going to go. You got year two of Carl Durrell? Year two of Carl Durrell at Colorado. Like, what's that going to look like? It's going to be amazing. You've got Utah, Kyle Whittingham, Cavs of Steel. Then you got a bye week. I mean, bye week, they're going to have to rest up after that gauntlet. I mean, if Clay Helton is 2-4 at that point, I think you're talking extension. Then you got Notre Dame coming out of the bye week. I mean, look, if they can keep it within 3 or 4 scores, I think that's Charlie Weiss guaranteed contract territory. Then you've got Arizona, Jed Fish. He's going to be sparking them by that point. That's a tough ask. Then you got back-to-back ASU Cal. I mean, you get a split there. Look, it's like Pac-12 basketball, right? If you've got back-to-backs on the road, you're just trying to get a split.
Nice.
Then UCLA rivalry game. Come on. BYU. Closing the year with BYU. BYU was tremendous last year. Frankly, I look at this and I say 4-8, Clay Helton. Can you do it? If you can get to 4-8, I think you at least roll it over another 5-6 years.
Yeah. What's the one or two on your schedule? Like, what's that?
So a one would be Talc,
okay,
which is scrapable with your fingernail. I would say this one is gypsum, scratchable with a fingernail.
Two. Okay. I'll go with that. Yeah, because you got still got Notre Dame.
You couldn't pull this off completely, but you can definitely do some damage to it with your fingernail.
They'll be favored in like 11 of these games. It's really, no cold weather. The only, Utah does have a bye week, but they're playing in the Coliseum. There's really nothing that you would go, oh yeah, that's why would you do that? You know, to a contender in the conference, they did nothing that's a contender. So this is definitely different than what we've seen in the past. So that's part of the reason why, like, yeah, we're not seeing these teams put in a real competitive disadvantage. A couple teams like Colorado, like Stanford for sure, but they definitely did some favors for USC in the schedule.
Yes.
All right. Next up, we got
Utah Utes.
Three weekday games, opening the season for Weber State on a Thursday. And then they got a road game at Stanford on a Friday in November. And then later in November, their finale is against Colorado on a Friday. Early bye week coming in week five. But they do have a bye week heading into the USC game, like we mentioned. So that's a big one. But they have to play USC and Arizona State back-to-back off that bye week. So I don't know. What do you think? What do you think about the Utes schedule?
It's medium hard. This one's going to be it's a challenge. I don't love the four straight games or the eight straight games, sorry, coming out of the bye week. They avoid Washington and get Washington State, which is probably a slight advantage in their favor. Stanford, Cal, I'm not sure which one you would want this year, so that's kind of a wash to me. But Washington State, Washington, they probably got the better end of it. I don't know. BYU and San Diego State are both true road games. Is that right?
At BYU and at San Diego State, yes.
What are you doing, Utah? Why'd you do that to yourself?
Yeah.
I would say this one, it's pretty hard. I mean, I'm looking at this and this doesn't look like a cake schedule, and having to do that back-to-back roadie in the non-conference is really kind of crappy. I'll call this this is seven. This is quartz. This is scratch window glass to me.
I think seven's a good place to put it, just because you got those early road games. But, you know, you have potential to be 4-0 going in the bye, too.
I mean, doesn't everybody
yeah,
have potential to be undefeated going into their bye week?
Sure.
Except Arizona?
For sure. That you go at Arizona, at USC and Arizona State, huge South implications right after the bye week. But then you got to go to Oregon State. That could be trappy for sure. And then, the end of the schedule is a little more reasonable. I mean, you got UCLA on the road at Stanford. We're not sure how Stanford's going to be. At Arizona, they're trash. The Oregon game is big, November 20th. If Utah takes care of business, I mean, that could be a really big one in the conference. And then, finishing up with Colorado, which I think will be a little bit down on a Friday. But, like, get through October 9th, October 16th with the two rivals in the South. Don't stub your toe against a team that you'll be favored against. And then that Oregon game could be absolutely huge. So things are set up okay, but it's not an easy road, but I think it'll be fruitful if they're able to get through these games. You know, they're all going to be a little tougher than they need to be, but if they get through them, I think a lot of those games they'll be favored in, they'll be in a good spot.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right. We've got a couple left. First we have
Washington Huskies.
Couple Friday games for the Huskies at Arizona on a Friday and Washington State and the Apple Cup on a Friday. They do have, I believe, Stanford. They have back-to-back roadies at Arizona, at Stanford. And I believe the Stanford one is Stanford has a bye. So they're one of, I think, a couple teams have that. I think UCLA might, too. We have two road games, and then the second one, the team's come off a bye. So it doesn't happen a lot, but that's one thing where maybe you didn't put Washington in the best spot. But, again, September 11th at Michigan, a team that was going to play Washington at home in 2020, now you get to go on the road and play Michigan. So that'll kind of set up the season for me as far as Washington goes.
If Washington doesn't post a really, really solid record this year, I think you have to start to question Jimmy Lake.
Yeah.
And I know it's year two, but Michigan, yeah, that'll be a challenge. The non-conference besides that, Arkansas State and Montana, you should crush them. Then in conference play, you avoid USC and you avoid Utah. So there's no real excuse. And it's one of the years with only four conference road games. So all of that sets up for them to make a big run in conference, and they should go at minimum 2-1 in non-conference. So if they don't have a really nice year this year, I think Washington fans have to start getting worried. I would call this because of Michigan, because it's a big, but it can't be higher than a 3. So I'll go Cal side again. Scratch it with a copper coin, baby.
I'll do that too. The early November games, Oregon, Arizona State back to back, but both of them are in Seattle, and it's Arizona State after, they play USC. So there's some advantages there. Those are the two toughest games, but at least you get them at home. Oregon's not coming off a bye. Arizona State's coming off a hard game. So, yeah, I'll agree with you there. I think this sets up pretty well for the Huskies. All right, last one we got.
Washington State Cougars.
A couple Friday games to end the season. Very late bye week. And, you know, USC and at Utah, week 3 and 4. I don't think this is going to be an easy one for Nick Rolovich. What are your initial thoughts?
You said you don't think it's going to be an easy one for Nick Rolovich.
I don't think it's like a super easy schedule. I think it's on the harder end. What do you feel?
So you've got 7 home games, right?
Yeah, I think so. 1, 2, 3.
Their non-conference, just to clarify, their non-conference is 3 home games. All against, so Utah State, Portland State, and BYU?
Yes.
Okay. And then their conference slate, so they've got to get USC, so it's USC instead of UCLA, which, not great. And then Utah instead of Colorado. Yeah. So conference-wise, a little bit challenging. Non-conference, not at all challenging. It seems I know we've been doing it a lot, but it seems like a classic appetite for me.
Okay.
It's a 5. It's still scrapable with a knife.
The at Oregon game, and at Arizona State, they're sandwiched between a bye, but those are definitely tough. You got USC, you got Utah, you got Arizona State. It's like if you're one of the 3 top teams in the South, they got them. But they do have Arizona, which is good, and that's a home matchup at the end of the season. And then playing Washington on a Friday. So that'll be, it won't be a short week because it's back to back, Friday games, but, the at Arizona State game also will be Arizona State coming off a bye. So that thing makes it a little bit, more challenging.
What are the actual numbers there? Can I get some numbers? Can one of you like nerds, please run some numbers for us on this?
Yeah.
Does it matter? Like, does it matter if one team's coming off a bye and the other one isn't? Like, tell me. You run the numbers. Run them.
And they're back-to-back in conference comes after they host USC, then at Utah and at Cal. So that's a difficult stretch. Willner did have a note, though, that the 3 teams that Washington State plays, Cal, Oregon State, and Oregon – they played all 3 of those teams after they play Washington. So there could be a little advantage there. So I'm middle of the road with you. I'm a 5 on this one as well. But, you're hoping that Washington kind of beats up like Cal, Oregon State, and Oregon a little bit and makes those games a little bit easier for Washington State. But I'm kind of middle of the road with this one too. Probably 5 is good just because the number of home games and, the out-of-conference slate just isn't that hard. And we'll see, what BYU looks like in the middle of the season. Late bye is not great. The back-to-back roadie's not great. At Arizona State and at Oregon, that's not great.
Are we done talking about the schedule now?
I think we're done.
Yes. Tremendous. Nice. I fought through it. For all of you out there, I fought through this discussion.
You did. All right, dude. Did you see what Greg Byrne said from Alabama? So he's the Alabama athletic director. He's a potential Pac-12 commissioner candidate. He said full stadiums this fall.
Yeah, I think there's a chance.
Do you think that's going to like make it easier for him to get the Pac-12 commissioner job if he wants it?
Oh, you mean from like a politics standpoint?
Yeah.
I don't think he's gunning for the Pac-12 commissioner job, to be honest. But I don't think it'll fundamentally matter. I mean, speaking optimistically, these guys have been doing that since last year. How many of them were talking optimistically last April about having full stadiums in the fall or having half full stadiums in the fall or whatever it was going to be, and then it didn't end up happening at anywhere near the rate a lot of these guys are optimistic about? So I'm fine with talking optimistically. And frankly, I mean, the situation does seem considerably better. I don't think it's completely out of the question that you might have full or reasonably packed stadiums this fall.
Yeah. There's another note I put in here. Guy Holliday, he's the wide receivers coach at University of Utah. He was let go, and there was his son posted some stuff on Twitter. He's a coach also, I think, in Texas somewhere. They had a couple wide receivers go to the transfer portal, and no one really knows why he was fired. I don't know if you heard anything about this, David. Any thoughts? I'm sure some stuff will come out.
No, he's just a guy.
Just a guy. Yeah.
You see what I did there?
I did. Guy Holliday.
Yeah, no, I don't have any thoughts on it, except it sounds very much like there's a problem there. This is now, what, the third or second time in 3 years that Utah's had a weird offseason thing with an assistant coach,
right.
Ed Morgan Scaly posting.
He's still there, though. He's
yeah,
still
Texas
there.
Racist stuff. Yeah, I guess this guy clearly didn't have the support of the players since they were transferring out.
Yeah, or they transferred out because he's not there. I'm not sure, but we'll have to try to get some clarification in the coming weeks. But just something to
I mean, you've got to be excited because this is your season, baby. We're going to be starting
football
previews, and we will start talking to all the publishers here pretty soon.
And real quick, I wanted to give an update on spring football.
Bet you did. I bet you did.
So I emailed the group, and here's what I found out. So USC starting on March 30th. Pro day will be March.
You can taste it, can't you?
March 24th. Yeah. So they'll probably do like a 3 day a week thing. For Arizona, they don't have a schedule yet, but they know they will start March 23rd. They'll have a March 17th pro day. Just so you know, there's no combine this year. You can invite to the combine, but they're not doing workouts there. You have to do the pro day. So everyone's going to have pro day. For Colorado, they're probably going to begin around when USC does March 29th, but they're still waiting approval from Boulder County. Washington has not, don't have a detailed practice schedule yet, but they're going to start March 30th also. I'm sorry, their pro day is March 30th, and then they'll start April 7th and go through May 1st. And he thinks they're only going to have Zoom access. We don't know if there's going to be in-person access at some of these places as well. Nothing for Oregon yet. They do know the pro day is April 2nd, but no dates at all. UCLA hasn't announced any dates. But they're speculating March 30th, at least according to Tracy. I don't know. Did you hear anything different, David?
We have heard nothing. We will hear nothing for many, many moons.
Yeah. That's the way
Chip Kelly, baby.
Chip Kelly. Yeah, we don't need to tell the media anything. Washington State, not any dates, but they're guessing around March 25th. Oregon State, they start April 6th. So that's going to be a little bit later. They don't have a pro day yet. Cal started. I didn't even realize this. February 24th, Cal started spring football. They started when we did our last show, and I didn't even know they had started spring football. The spring game is going to be March 20th. They don't know the pro day yet. Stanford, nothing is set in stone yet. They think they might move everything out until May. Arizona State started today, March 3rd. So if you want to follow our buddy Chris Cartman, you can see some updates from them. They're actually going to allow some media to attend practice, but only 4 media members per practice. So Chris Cartman was out there today, but it's going to be some kind of rotation. So it depends on, you know, I guess your pecking order in the media, or if they, I don't know how they're going to do it, but only a few media members a day. I kind of like that. Just a few. And then, Utah, no details on spring camp, but it's probably going to begin the middle of this month on the 15th. So we have a couple have started. Arizona State started. Cal, surprisingly, has already started. I'm sure you wanted to know all of that, David.
Oh God, it's so exciting. I love listening to you read dates.
All right.
Like the note of excitement in your voice when you're talking about when spring practice will begin is just, I mean, it's beautiful. It's magical.
I guarantee you no place else in the world has what everyone's doing on spring football, just because I've emailed all of our publishers to find out.
I guarantee it. Yeah. You are a content creation machine,
I try.
I appreciate that about you.
That's what I do. All right. Let's take a quick break and we'll come back and get to your questions. All right, we're back here on the podcast of champions. We got a bunch of questions. I got some limited time, David. Do you think we could knock these out in like half an hour? Do you think we can do that?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Where are we starting?
Well, I'll do a voicemail first. How's that? We have one voicemail. I'll play that, and then we'll get into the questions.
Well. Hello, Ryan. Hello, Sith Lord Dave. That's right, it's me. Resident Stanford fan. You haven't listened to my implorations. You've negated all of my requests. You flat out poker-faced an acrostic work of art. I have no other choice. I will be forced to start exacting much more painful measures. That's right. Every week that Dave fails to sing All Right Now, as a penance, as a groveling apology for your lack of confidence in David Shaw and the mighty Stanford Cardinal. For every week he does not honor his word and sing that song, I will be forced to flood your social media with Coach Chip Kelly and Coach Clay Helton quotes, singing their virtues, spreading a positive message around both football programs. If that doesn't add enough pressure, I'll ratchet it up a notch. I will see to it that the new Pac-12 commissioner every single week retains at least one of Larry Scott's harebrained ideas for how to make the Pac-12 a little bit more marginalized. That's right. We'll keep this thing going completely off the rails. Proceed at your own peril. TTFN.
Nice.
Wow. I think the creepiest part was ending it with Ta-ta for now. Like,
yeah.
I think that was definitely it. Clear kid, notes. Like, I mean, clear, obvious notes. The baby crying in the background. Again, just beautiful.
Playing like it a xylophone like, or something.
Yeah, the kid was definitely banging on a xylophone. That was happening. Tremendous. I have no notes. That was just excellent.
We don't have a lot of time, but we can definitely schedule that him, you know, his performance of All Right Now, maybe in a future episode.
Yeah.
We got an email from Frank in Sacramento. Washington's future doesn't look boundless. This is a bunch of crap. UW Athletics unveiled its nutty Boundless Futures program, which they say is a comprehensive personal, professional, and quote, leadership development program designed to help Husky athletes benefit from coming NIL legislation.
Whenever I hear Husky athletes, by the way, I just think of offensive linemen.
These are the big men in the trenches. Yeah.
They're trying to help the Husky athletes. Anyway, continue.
This is the body image of these athletes is a real issue. There's a mental health thing.
Husky's kind of a nice way of saying it, right?
Yeah, that's true. Like, if Husky. You go to a store, you don't go to the big fat section. It's like a Husky section. Yeah. Husky section. Washington will allow athletes to start and promote a business, be paid for sponsored content and endorsements, or sell autographs. How is this being talked about as a leadership development program? This is about kids getting a cut of the big college athletics money floating around. The best high school 7-on-7 and AAU players will come to college with tons of Instagram followers in hand, looking to cash in and not want a university to help, quote, start and promote the kids' brands. And then surely take a cut. I don't think the universities can take a cut. The savvy kids will all go to hot schools in established media markets, grow their brands, and keep all the cash for themselves. Frank in Sacramento.
I don't really understand the critique.
Not either. I don't think the schools – I think the schools are doing that to help them, like, build their own brands. Yeah, if you're coming in and you're Zion Williamson or whatever, like, yeah, you got 2 million Instagram followers in high school. Sure. Like, you probably don't need help. But a lot of the kids – might, you know, maybe you're like the best lacrosse player, you don't have much, and they're going to help you build your brand a little bit. But I don't think the schools can take a cut of that. I think that's a service they're going to provide to the student athlete. But I could be wrong. That's my understanding.
I don't know. I mean, maybe it just means they'll help them file their taxes with all this money coming in. I don't know what leadership development went. Isn't that like just a vague ass term for like learn how to be, you know, somebody who makes money?
Yeah, and we don't know what the legislation is going to be. We don't know how they're going to make money. Yeah. They're putting programs in place to try to like help them when that does come down.
This is good. It'll be an advantage for them, Frank. Promise.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh boy. All right. This is from Michael in Seattle. It's real long. Rivalry Week scheduling suggestion. Hello, Ryan and Dan. Just finished listening to your latest podcast on the lack of a Pac-12 schedule released. I just said schedule.
Yeah, with like
a K. Do you even
K.
hear what I'm saying? I'm saying schedule.
With a K, I think, yes.
With a K and a U at the beginning, not at the end. Anyway, of a Pac-12 schedule release. Well, I'm not sure if Larry and his crew of misfit tennis execs are still I can't talk today. I can't do it. Are still taking suggestions. I wanted to give my 2 cents on a schedule change that's probably more beneficial to the conference moving forward and has been on my mind since your conversation about rivalries last summer. As an Oregon fan in Seattle, Ducks versus Huskies matchups tend to be the biggest games of the year, or at least a make or break game in the mind of most fans, whether the season was a success or not. I'm curious to know your thoughts on both teams adopting a, quote, Michigan model for rivalry scheduling, that is, playing your in-state little brother midway through the season, mid-October through early November, and moving the Ducks-Huskies matchup to rivalry weekend at the end of the season, featured against the Iron Bowl, OSU-Michigan, USC-Notre Dame, etc. Here are some facts for the case. Since the Pac-12 began in 2011, 8 of the 9 games have featured at least one ranked team, and 4 of the 9 games have featured both teams ranked. Better to have this at the end of the season than midway if we're talking about making a case for the playoffs. Both teams have combined for the 6 of the 9 Pac-12 championships so far. Winning this game matters to the division and a potential NY6 or playoff bid. Looking back since 2012, Oregon-Washington viewership would have ranked in the top 5 viewership during rivalry weekend about 50% of the time, and at least in the top 8 of viewership in at least 7 years going back to 2012. That's also with several years of a dreaded 10 p.m. Eastern time kickoff. With respect to ranking, which are the best rivalries in the conference, I don't see any other two teams taking shots week after week on this podcast, formulating passive-aggressive monologues about which offensive line coach couldn't develop talent or what backup tight end coach can't recruit. You see it all over social media. These two teams have a level of hate for one another that no other team can match. Larry, if you're listening, this type of engagement is something no amount of money can buy, not even at your salary. I know most Cougar and Beaver fans will lament having their Super Bowl being relegated to midseason, but guess what? Most D2 schools who play big-name opponents in their OOC schedule have their biggest game week 2. It's not that hard to stomach, and your once-in-a-blue-moon victories in the respective games don't matter much outside your farm towns. Wow. Again, yeah. Love to hear your thoughts on this. Thanks for all the hard work you put into the show. Michael in Seattle. Michael, you make a very compelling case. You're going to get us a lot of hate mail from those in the farm towns.
You will. I think it's a compelling case. I like it. I think this would work. Right now, it's week 13 is when you're seeing the Apple Cup, and you know when you're seeing the Civil War. It's week 10, right? That Oregon's playing Washington, and I would like. I mean, I think that would be cool to be a final week of the season game. I got no issues with this.
Yeah, I'm for it. I'm pro. You made a compelling case, and now I am with that, as the kids say.
I don't think the Michigan-Michigan State game is diminished.
They say I'm with that?
You're with it. That's what the kids are saying these days,
yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh.
Yes. No, I mean, I don't think these games would be diminished, like the Civil War being like week 10 or something. Or you know, I think that's kind of cool. You know,
are we supposed Apple to Cup? Call it – what's it supposed to be called now, the Oregon game?
I'm not really big on – change so like
I know you are
I'm those grammar people that don't want you to say new words but I mean that's cool, like the Apple Cup. I think those games are like unique enough that they don't have to be the final week of the season, you know. I like it. It is a huge rivalry game. It has been nationally relevant when the Pac-12 has not really been nationally relevant. That's as close to nationally relevant you're going to get in the conference, so yeah, I'm good with it.
Okay, cool.
This one's from Dan. He's got a lot of some people's signatures. Like, there's a lot of stuff in their signatures. He's got a lot of stuff in his signatures.
Yeah, but, he's one of those lot of stuff guys.
Yeah. Another dumb Pac-12 expansion idea. We know the Pac-12 conference favors tier one research universities and rival pairs. The only top 10 media markets outside of but in proximity to the Pac-12 footprint are Dallas and Houston. The University of Texas and A&M aren't coming to the Pac-12, and I don't think any other Texas school is leaving the Big 12 for the Pac-12 as long as the Longhorns are in the Big 12. I think that's what he means. So what remains? The University of Houston is a tier one research university and the third largest university in the state of Texas. Pretty good basketball tradition, some football tradition, and you got to think that their athletic programs would take a step up if they joined the Conference of Champions. There happens to be another tier one research university in Houston. Would Rice step up their game in order to become the Vanderbilt of the Pac-12? I think Stanford would have something to say about that. This gives the Pac-12 another intra-city rivalry in a major media market. It might be off, but I think Houston Rice gives the Pac-12 a piece of the Houston media market and might bump TV revenue enough to justify splitting the pie 14 ways instead of 12. In addition, Pac-12 teams get to play in Texas regularly, which has to help recruiting in the state. Another option would be SMU instead of Rice to get a piece of Dallas. It's a secular school in spite of its name, but it is not a tier one research university. Thoughts from Dan.
I love it.
Yeah, I think it's cool.
Houston and Rice would be cool.
I think it's a good pair. Like you said, there are good research universities. You don't have the excuse that you.
I mean, Houston is a jump up from being a power, I think. Like if they get into the Power Five, I think they could be a. I think they would be a medium Pac-12 power pretty quickly. Rice, I don't know. I mean, they've been in Conference USA for a bit now. But if if they start getting, even at the Pac-12's meager sums, it's probably more than the Conference USA schools are getting. It might encourage more investment in the program. And they do, I mean, in theory, those two schools have better recruiting bases than, certainly
most
Colorado,
of the Pac-12.
Certainly Utah, I think to an extent. Maybe more than, Oregon State and the Arizonas as well. I mean, obviously they're having to compete against some big boys also in Texas, but you got to think in that Houston area, there's a lot to scoop up that doesn't get recognized by, Texas and A&M and that sort of thing. So, I think this is an interesting idea. And I think if you snag both, I would go Rice and Houston, and really try to get a lot of value from that media market. I don't know what SMU is bringing to the table. And I think there might be just, there's some complications with SMU going back to the old Pony Express. So yeah, anyway, I think Houston Rice. Yeah, I'm all for it. I co-sign.
I like it. I don't know if that's going to be the way of the future, but going into the 2024, contract negotiations, that market, I think could be a benefit. We might see just like super conferences or whatever, but I think this is a proactive move. And I mean, you're going to get worse. I think there's upside here and not a ton of downside. So yeah, I'm good with one of these. I like it.
Love it. Oh boy. This is from Thomas.
This is like actual Google Doc that was.
Yeah, I think it was even so long that it had to come in a Google Doc attachment. Wow. Okay.
You want to like paraphrase or what? What do you?
I'm reading it. I'm reading it. I'm going in. Beach Cities Babylon. Hey guys, I was deeply enmeshed writing an off-season think piece for you when I heard towards the end of your last show you both claimed that the Beach Cities area within LA is overrated. We did not both claim that. Ryan did not claim that.
No, I've lived here for like 25 years. No, I do not.
I was born in it. I'm like Bane. It's part of me, and I hate sand. That's really fundamentally what it is. I hate sand, and I hate sand people. Not just the Star Wars characters, but like the people who just like want to hang out on the beach and play like beach volleyball. Those fucks.
That's what I was doing this morning.
And I bet like, it was. I
it
bet
started
it was.
To rain. Like one game in, we wanted to get a few games in before it rained. There's like five of us. We just kind of
Nothing better than being on the beach when it's raining.
It was raining. The balls were wet.
Yeah, like, no. The only thing better than sand is mud.
I was so Yeah, I usually go right to Meals on Wheels. I had to go home and like hose off and shower off before I could go because it was just like kind of stuck.
Yeah, no, it's great. It's great when you go to the beach and then you have to spend like 30 minutes cleaning yourself afterwards, get all the kernels of sand off of you.
Great exercise though, but yeah, it was a little tough. It started raining. We don't get much of that here in LA.
Yeah, no sand. Ugh. Hearing this, my hands almost slipped off the steering wheel with shock, as I would say they are definitely not overrated. As someone born and raised in Southern California, having lived in both the San Gabriel Valley and the agonizingly congested neighborhoods of the West Side, the beach cities always felt like paradise. Even though I have no desire to live in LA again, if someone threatened me at gunpoint like Lady Gaga's dog walker forcing me to move back, I would pick the South Bay in a heartbeat. I do realize you both have had different experiences, but I would definitely say even the Pac-12 podcast's very essence reflects the sunny, laid-back quality that the beach cities ooze. True, years and years of carcinogenic emissions from local oil refineries and noxious chemicals seeping into the local groundwater from building military aircraft have taken an environmental toll on the place. But still, where else in LA can you do things like walk or bike ride for miles along a coastal boardwalk so effortlessly? It did occur to me, though, that both of you may not share my enthusiasm here because of what part of town you are most familiar with, respectively. For example, as Dave grew up in El Segundo, relatively few Southern Californians may be aware that that means there has been a dark, ominous cloud hovering over him his entire life. Never mind the fact that it originally would have happened to be emissions from the Chevron oil refinery and not his often misanthropic and bilious. Wow, aura.
He's got a lot of words.
Yeah. Combine that with El Segundo being the only town in the South Bay where you can't actually live within walking distance of the beach, despite being only a few miles away, and it makes perfect sense how he manages to be so impressively and consistently irascible. So, technically, you can. I mean, it depends on, like, I mean, what's walking distance, right?
Yeah, you
miles.
Can walk. Like, you, just
you
go
can
down,
walk easily. I've walked to the beach from here many times.
Grand or whatever.
I walked to the beach with a bottle of gin one time, drank it all, and walked back. And let me tell you, drinking some dry gin on a hot day on a beach, actually not fun. Not a good experience. Don't do it. But it happened. But yeah, you just walk up Grand Avenue and there you are. So yeah, it's close enough. You don't get to live on the beach in El Segundo because if you lived on the beach, you would be, hanging out with, Hyperion and whatever that other thing is. But what are you gonna do? All right. Ryan, by contrast, chose his palatial abode in Gardena.
No, but
obviously
okay,
to relive his past glory playing volleyball for the Trojans, being so close to the sand in Redondo. However, living that far inland means that while he can wake up and enjoy the tantalizing breeze coming off the ocean, he's too far to actually see it in the distance. Does he know where you live?
No, but after the paragraph, I'll give you a few thoughts.
No doubt this gap fuels his aspirational and entrepreneurial side to relocate ever closer to that endless blue horizon. I'm sure he can't help but wake up excited each morning to see what new opportunities each day brings.
So – when I moved, I've lived in Hermosa, the same house for like 23 years. I'm east of PCH, but I'm about a half a mile from the ocean. And I, at the time, I was like in my 20s, I lived on the Strand with some buddies. And when I moved there, they like made fun of me that I would move to Gardena. So I don't know. I don't know Thomas, but maybe he knows friends of mine. And because that's like they would tease me about you moved to Gardena because I went east of PCH by a couple, like a block or something. So that's kind of weird that he brought that up. But no, I live in Hermosa, but okay.
But let's set the sarcasm aside. Where else in L.A. can you find Rick Neuheisel aimlessly wandering down the street trying to find designer gloves? Isn't that kind of Pac-12 stargazing worth the effort alone? Sure, I could go on and on, but then you might think I'm actually being serious about this and not just cooking up elaborate off-season content that hopefully has been making you laugh and not ready to file a restraining order. And yes, I'm hoping that many of your listeners who have not spent much time in LA are intrigued enough to check the South Bay out the next time they are in town, and maybe, just maybe, you should have a Pac-12 podcast happy hour at Sharky's one of these days now that Dave has returned to his ancestral homeland. Nevertheless, keep up the scintillating work in my absence, at least until I continue to figure out how to get to the Golden Gate Bridge from Fisherman's Wharf, Thomas. Why would we go to Sharky's when we have so many good, like, little El Segundo bars that I can walk to? I realize I'm just being a selfish man here, but come on.
Yeah, well, we had the other things. We had to do them like Westwood and stuff. We always did them near you. The one thing, so that if your people are going to hate on Sharky's, the pandemic did open up the roof. It's like they when they it burnt down like years ago, and they built this like roof deck, And then the city didn't let them open it, so they used it for storage for years. But now with the pandemic, they're allowed to use the roof deck. It's pretty freaking cool up there. So
Is it though?
You're up on the roof. It's pretty nice. Look, even you might like it.
If it's got like tiki decorations, get me the hell out of there. All right.
I don't want straw over the bar.
Speaking of tiki, real quick,
I know we don't have a lot of time, but Fry's closed. And the Manhattan Beach store was tiki themed. Were you a Fry's guy growing up?
No, because I could never find friggin' parking there.
Parking was a nightmare. The customer service was terrible, but it's sort of sad that it's gone.
Yeah, I mean, I went a few times, usually when I was like going to a movie over there and I was like early or something.
It's an electronics store for people that don't know. It's kind of unique.
Like you could do, like when I was a kid, I would get like the occasional video game there, but then you could also do like hardcore, like do it yourself, like engineering, like electrical engineering crap.
I mean, that was like, when I was in grad school, like for my getting my master's, I live in Manhattan Beach, and like if I had to build something on a circuit board, I could buy resistors and capacitors and stuff there. Like you could actually buy that stuff, but also like Dave said, video games and things. And yeah, they just closed their doors like a week ago or something.
Yeah, pouring out for Fry's.
Perk wrote in. And he says, I know most of the listeners want and expect either Chip Clay Helton or Chip Kelly to be fired this year. Are there any other coaches you guys can see getting let go this year, and is there a scenario in which either Justin Wilcox or Herm Edwards are replaced after the season?
No.
I don't think so. Yeah, I think Chip and Clay, and the new guys, it's like you can't really get rid of them. Shaw's not going anywhere. I don't think Herm, Justin. Yeah, I don't think Jimmy Lake's going anywhere. I don't think Jonathan Smith's going anywhere.
Yeah, no, I think it's the LA schools. It would have to be something odd for it to be another school.
Yeah, and I don't know if we want to do this last thing, but Dave, how important is winning and maintaining Senate and House majority? Every president seems to lose one or both during their terms. Bill Clinton lost it 2 years into his first term. Is it an accurate reflection on the president's performance? Thanks, guys, from Perk.
Yeah, I would say the reason every president seems to lose it is because most don't do anything or do bad things because, you know, presidents are generally pretty bad. So it's important. And if you did good things that were popular and good, then you would probably maintain it. But most don't. And they struggle with maintaining it.
Yeah.
This is from Hitler Day.
Oh, boy. Oh, you made Google this.
Asinus ad lyrum. Is that what we're going with? Pronunciation-wise?
Do you know what that is?
No, I'm going with it, but I'm Googling it right now. This means an ass to the lyre,
yeah.
Which basically means an awkward individual. I don't know how or why. Maybe it's like a literal donkey playing the instrument, the lyre. I guess that's awkward looking. Anyway.
Is it a lyre? Is it lyre?
I don't know. It's one of those words that I've only ever read.
Yeah, you know whoever says it, yeah.
I think you boys were right last week to call USC's hiring of Eric Mobley a smart move, or at least a lesson learned. After all, missing athletic talent was what tripped folks up in the Aunt Becky scandal, right? Since we have a brief window before the NBA draft in which Ryan is a Hoops fan, I thought I'd ask after something David said on his solo outing that Pac-12 schools tolerate and overpay inept men's basketball coaches more than they do football coaches. According to USA Today's salary database, three schools aren't even trying. Cal, Oregon State, and Washington State all pay under $2 million. Colorado's Tad Boyle is criminally underpaid at $1.8 million, but he has the biggest potential bonus package. Stanford's pay isn't disclosed. Oregon's Dana Altman seems like a pretty okay coach in earning his $3.1 million. That leaves six coaches who are all paid over $2.5 million, and I'm skeptical that they're worth it. First, please rank the following in terms of how much each one is swindling his employer. Second, is it a coincidence that five of these six are in the league's Group of Five football division, the Pac-12 South? I will answer the second part first. Yes, it is a coincidence. And also, get out of here, Hitler Day. Don't talk shit. I am a robust UCLA basketball fan. I will snark all day on UCLA football, but get out of here. Okay, looking at these, he's got $5.5 million for UCLA for Mick Cronin. $2.8 million USC Andy Enfield, $2.5 million UW Mike Hopkins, $2.5 million ASU Bobby Hurley, $3.8 million Utah Larry Kostkowiak, $3.3 million Sean Miller, Arizona. I would need it in context of the nation. I think a lot of times what schools are doing is trying to keep up their base of salary for whoever they're paying. Like, you're not necessarily paying for the exact quality you're getting. You're paying to maintain the status of the job sometimes. I know for UCLA, specifically with the way the regents and approval works for salaries, they're often looking to increase salaries year over year, every year, so that when it goes, when it's time again to hire a new coach, they're working from a higher base to work from. So there's some weird state dynamics that at play with UCLA, and I'm sure with Cal to an extent. I don't know if that's playing out in all these states, but there's something to keep in mind. From a, like an actual like dollars for wins standpoint, look, should any basketball coach be getting paid $5.5 million a year? No. All these guys in the mid twos, I mean, Andy Enfield, I think he's a bad coach. I don't think he's very good, but he's recruited okay. And they've turned out some okay teams, and USC fans are like ambivalent and go either way on him, basically, right?
Yeah, I would say.
I think he's, I mean, whatever. Mike Hopkins, I think, has been a disaster. A lot of talk that he was going to be great. He was okay for a couple years and then disaster. Bobby Hurley, the impression you have of Hurley really doesn't jive with what actually happens on the court. His teams are really undisciplined. They don't play a lot of defense. So, yeah, I don't think he's going to be worth it, and I think he might not be long there. I mean, they've had a lot of talent to be producing some pretty mediocre teams. Utah, Krzysztofiak, I think, is really good. I think he's recruiting as if he's at a D2 school. So I don't think he's worth the money because Utah, it's not a huge power, but they can recruit better than they're doing under Krzysztofiak. He's a good coach, good at the X's and O's stuff. They're going to beat some teams that they are way, way less talented than, but you got to actually recruit a baseline level of talent. So not worth the money. And then Sean Miller is going to throw Arizona on sanctions, as actually already self-sanctioned, and has never reached a Final Four. So not worth $3.3 million. But yeah, I agree with you, Dana Altman. Probably, you know, he's got some odd baggage, but probably the best. Hey, Tad Boyle, Altman, Mick Cronin, I think, are some combination of the best coaches in the league. Altman's the most proven of that bunch. So yeah, $3.1 million for him. And Boyle, I agree with you, is by far the most underpaid. If he was getting $2.5 million, he'd still be the most underpaid guy in the league for what he's able to do at that job.
All right. We got a couple more. This is from Paul Webfoot, USK and UCKLAH. The other Pac-12 football podcast, there's another one, with the hosts who try to learn things before opening their mouth holes.
Who would do that?
Why would you do that? Use an advanced statistical model that has Utah atop the South for 2021. Surely USC is second, right? Nope. It's UC mother trucking L goddamn A. Well, they must be third, right? Wrong again, sucker. They're fourth behind ASU. It seems to run contrary to the conventional wisdom and all things sensible, but in college football, conventional wisdom is often dumb, bad, and wrong. So what's your take on this? Also, if this were to come to fruition, would it be enough to get Helton fired and Kelly extended? Definitely would get Helton fired. I think this is bunk. Like, if you don't have USC as one or two in the South, then, I mean, you probably don't know much about football. I don't know what formula is going to tell you that they shouldn't be there, but if you just look at the talent.
You're trying to start a friggin' war between us and whatever podcast he's talking about.
This keyboard thing or something.
I think it's 12-pack radio. Look, UCLA, if you if you're going just off the numbers and off of who they're returning, you can make an argument they're going to be pretty good. Now, me, I'm cognizant of the fact that they are coached by Zombie Chip Kelly, and so that leads me to dampen my enthusiasm for the UCLA football season. But yeah, I mean, a model is going to look at them as like, wow, they check a lot of boxes. They should be pretty good. I have no idea why any model would be spitting out USC behind three teams in the South, though. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. I know they've got a little bit more roster churn than UCLA, but nobody has a ton this year, and USC has a ton more talent. So, yeah, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
They have continuity on the coaching staff. They have talent. Like, yeah, there's not
– And when you have continuity on a coaching staff that includes Clay Helton.
Clay Helton.
That's what are you even doing? and yeah. Seth Doge. I learned about Seth Doge this week. Can I tell you how?
How?
The Athletic put out a poll in a USC story that asked people to fill it out to determine the job that Clay Helton was doing to, you know, talk about all that stuff. And I decided to fill it out myself. One of the questions was what assistant coaches are doing the best job at USC. And I, not knowing many of them, I just picked Seth Doge because that was a name that it's was interesting. Seth,
it's Dagey, by the way, which I thought it was Doge too, but it's pronounced Dagey.
Okay. I'm going to go with Doge, but that's fine. you know, he can pronounce it his way and I'll pronounce it mine. Yeah, and then I tweeted that out to everyone to fill that out too. I'm awaiting the results. If anyone has the results of that poll, I want to see exactly how much support Clay Helton ended up with.
Because that'd probably be directly attributed.
Every time I identify one of those, I am going to tweet it out every single time. Well, and that one was good because the writer he got like look, I'm not trying to Twitter clout here. He got like one retweet, like one like of when he posted it. And then I like put it out there and it was like 40 people liked a bunch of comments. So I'm wondering if I tipped it pretty
well.
Oh,
yeah. I'm sure you did.
I mean, I'm excited to see.
I have a pretty big following. And when I have a poll going, you're able to like make damage to that. Like his poll, you could probably dominate.
So I've got, I don't know, like 3,000 followers on Twitter. But they're almost exclusively, so there's like 100 self-loathing USC fans, and I love them. I love every one of them because like very like-minded. The self-loathing UCLA fans and the self-loathing USC fans, they are brothers from other mothers. But the rest of it was, I think all of my following is basically all people, who just hate USC, like Washington, Oregon, all, you know, comrades in arms. And so when I tweet one of those things, I think like basically it's chewy content for like 2,500 of my followers.
Nice.
It's great. All right. We got one from Shane to end us today. Networking at the Tuscaloosa Rotary Club. There was a question last week about what the conference could do to position itself through partnerships with tech and growth industries in our footprint as a recruiting tool. First of all, yes, every school is already doing this. Second of all, this is a pet peeve of mine that I hope I can help listeners with. Adult men, you've got to stop using your own perspective on life as an avatar for what 17 and 18-year-old star football recruits might value. It's probably not networking with tech companies. Six of the top 9 kids in the 2021 class are going to either Alabama or Ohio State, and every single one of those kids believes they are exactly 3 years away from being drafted into NFL greatness. Football is their destiny, and they will maximize their temporary inconvenient stop on a college campus to win a championship. Shout out to my man, Cardale Jones, who told it like it is. We ain't coming here to play school. He just said out loud what most of us pretend isn't happening. Our fine university and that kid isn't lining up for the internship at Google. Sorry. This is such a message board trope. Sometimes something I hear from Washington fans all the time. We're a top global university in a beautiful, vibrant city with Boeing and Microsoft and Amazon and Starbucks. Who wouldn't want to go here? If more elite football recruits prioritize quality of life or legitimate academic opportunities, not a damn one of them would choose to spend their time in Norman, Oklahoma. Reminder, we exaggerate punchlines for comedic survival, but the Pac-12 is, quote, good at football, or emphasized, good at football. The conference added 55 4- and 5-star players in the 2021 cycle, 21 more than the Big 12, and just slightly behind the Big 10 and ACC. We're landing great kids, talented kids. Our problem isn't collective quality. Our problem is we don't have that one evil singularity, a Death Star school pulling in all of the elite talent promising playoff, championship, or bust. A program like that tends to pull others into their orbit and into national relevance. Yes, I'm simplifying a large population of individual perspectives and priorities into a couple big buckets, but from your experience covering recruiting for years, how wrong am I? Keep up the work. Your friend and compatriot, Shane.
Hey, Shane. Look, a serious email from Shane.
I was waiting for the punchlines, but they didn't come. It was just a serious question. I would say for basketball, it's 100% true in that literally every kid who comes into, I think, almost any high major university thinks they're going to the NBA in a year. Some of them are quickly disabused of that notion, but they have anybody in the top 100 or 150 kids in college basketball recruiting they all have smoke blown up their ass for like 3 or 4 years at least, telling them they're going to the NBA. So basketball, 100% true. Football, it's different. Most of the five-star types are thinking they're going NFL as soon as 3 year clock is up. I think more of them are realistic, outside of that, you know, top 25, top 30 group. I think a lot of them do have, like, you know, they're realistic. They think they're going to have a chance to play in the NFL, but they're also doing school crap. They're not basketball. You can run into some guys who are like, oh, wow, you thought you were going one and done and you didn't do any of your schoolwork. Football, you generally don't. You more of the kids are involved in the school and doing that sort of stuff. So yeah, outside of the top chunk of them, I don't think this is completely true. But basketball it is.
Yeah. And I think, you know, he's talking about something you've talked about before. Right now, the Pac-12 doesn't have their Clemson. They don't have that Death Star program. They just don't. There's that gravitational pull of an Alabama or a Clemson or Ohio State that just kind of makes everybody better. You don't have it in the Pac-12. Obviously, the obvious candidates, USC, they've been down. Can Oregon do it? Could Washington do it? Can UCLA or Arizona State? I mean, we haven't really seen it yet. They've had some bites at the apple, some semblance of success, but not the kind of just overall just taking over things like we've seen Clemson do in the ACC. And that would definitely elevate the Pac-12 in general by going to college football playoff and making it, you know, cooler to play in that conference as opposed to now where this is the conference that nobody makes the playoffs.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, we've talked about it, but you have to have eventually you have to get back to that. You have to have some school that's actually going to be a consistent breakthrough candidate.
And it's true. It's right, though, when he's saying, like, you're a 45-year-old guy that went to school 30 years ago or whatever, and you're a big fan. What you prioritize isn't what this 17, 18-year-old kid. So when you see that hype video that comes out that's customized to a prospect, and you're like, why are you bothering doing that? Well, the kid likes it. Or if he's playing, you know, watching guys play video game on Twitch or whatever, like, they're doing things as a 16, 17-year-old that you're not doing as a 45-year-old or whatever. And you can't look at the world from your point of view. I think the Texas boosters are doing the same thing with the eyes of Texas right now. It's different. I mean, these kids, these are prospects. They don't look at the world like you do. They don't look at picking a school the way you do. So I think Shane's right on a lot of that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, eyes of Texas, that's a whole other fun deal. Has to do a lot with the South and
right.
certain things.
But there are all these boosters wrote in and they were like complaining.
Oh, that story was insane.
Yeah. I mean, like, emails
some of the things
were
that they were saying, man.
It's
imagine putting that into a public record and just feeling good about yourself and then doubling down. Like, most of those boosters were anonymous, but there was one guy who then was like, yeah, you can quote me and you can ask me some more questions. It's just like, dude.
Yeah, I mean, you're definitely not relating to what the modern, you know, student athlete coming out of high school is. What's important to them, it's not what's important to you. So that's a good point.
Yeah, that's putting it away.
All right. Well, I got to get out of here. Good stuff, though.
You've got to go.
Great show. Awesome stuff. Thanks for all the questions. Thanks for the 5-star reviews. Thanks to my co-host, David Woods. That's David Woods. And I'm Ryan Abraham. And we're the Podcast of Champions. We really appreciate you listening. Spend some time out of your day. And we'll talk to you next time.
Goodbye.